This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning, and welcome to Childhood Matters.
There are thousands of children in California who are in need of a temporary or permanent home. Are you a non-biological parent to one of them? Could you be? Whether it be family members in need of assistance or choosing to become a foster parent or adopt a child, it's essential to provide children with the love and support they deserve and need to flourish during a time that's kind of difficult during their life. I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here each week to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, child care providers, big sisters, big brothers, aunts and uncles, or anyone who cares for and about children. Foster care and kinship care offer a home to children who have been abused, neglected, or whose parents can't care for them due to poverty, drugs, illness, incarceration, death, or other serious circumstances. It could be anything. It's a big responsibility for someone to take on, and often relatives step up to care for children even when it puts a hardship on the entire family. Some people become legal guardians and others don't, hoping to help out for a short period of time. Some people start off providing foster care and then adopt their child, while others know that their home will be a temporary safe place for a child before other arrangements are made. The issues and emotions children face when they leave their home are very complex, from sometimes relief and a sense of safety to shame, fear, anger, and mistrust. They don't know what their future will bring. Foster parents can offer hope and love, and when the system works as it should, a child can begin to heal, especially when the non-biological parent gets support from community programs. And there are programs as well to support the parents who hope to be able to reunite with their child. Today we'll find out more about what it takes to be a parent to a child in need and thank the people who step forward to offer their homes. You know, they not only do they offer their homes, but their food, their love, and we just want to thank the parents and the grandparents and the nieces and nephews, whoever they are, who step up to care for these children. If you want to be part of this conversation, call us at 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. You can also email us at childhoodmatters.org. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Intisar Sharif, the chairperson of the Early Childhood Education Department at Contra Costa College. A tenured professor at the college for over 20 years, she's educated thousands of caregivers in the Bay Area, and she's the director of the Foster Kinship Care Continuing Education Program at the college. She's also trained and educated hundreds of early childhood professionals nationwide through her work as a faculty member of West Ed in Sausalito. As an educator and trainer, Dr. Sharif specializes in teaching caregivers to be culturally aware and sensitive to the needs of diverse communities, multicultural families, and issues related to marginalized and oppressed people. She's traveled to Budapest, Hungary, El Salvador, and Nicaragua, working as a consultant with Whole Child International. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving the quality of care in orphanages around the world. The single parent of three sons, Dr. Sharif states, "With all that I do, I continue to find my most challenging and rewarding job is being a mother." Dr. Intisar Sharif, I'm so grateful you're with us today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, you know, I'd like to start off right away with you about, you can talk to us about the people you work with who are either foster parents or providing kinship care. Explain what kinship care is, first off, and also what's needed and what motivates these parents to often put their own retirement dreams aside to care for a child.
I'd like to start off by saying, number one, I am an adoptive parent of four myself. So that's my sort of personal interest in this topic as well. But I am not a kinship provider. I have never adopted someone from my family. A kinship provider or caregiver is someone who has a child they're caring for who's a relative, usually. Not necessarily, because kin can be extended in terms of extended family members or people in your community that you're caring for. And quite often, Rona, it's not that the kinship provider has chosen to do this. It's a circumstance that they're placed in where they step up to the plate to care for this child so the child doesn't get distanced from them, from their family or from the community that they grew up in. Because oftentimes when children are placed in foster care, there is no guarantee that they're going to be placed with someone who knows them or any of their family members. And one of the biggest issues for children is this whole area of being separated from kin, not being around familiar people, not being able to continue to go to school that they're familiar with and so forth. So oftentimes placing them with a kinship provider allows more continuity in their life.
Over the years, I've also seen that often people will go through the system through a more formal approach to kinship care, and there are benefits to that. Sometimes people can actually get some support and services, and then other families also do it without ever really letting anyone else outside know about it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and I think that traditionally, before people used the services of the system, family members took care of family members. I mean, lots of times a child might be born and not even know that an aunt raised them, and you know, that was their mother. So it's not like this is
right.
something we're unfamiliar with, but it's more, you know, it's systematic now where there's a law. All the laws are involved. Children have to end up going to court, and so many legal issues are intended upon it. But some people do not want to do that. Some family members do not want to go through the system. They do not want to have a social worker in their life. They do not want to have dictates around how they interact or behave or engage with this child. So they do this informally, and we don't even have them, those numbers aren't even known to us.
That's right. And the key here is to hope and pray that whoever's caring for this child is really getting the support they need, the knowledge they need to take care of a child who sometimes has some special needs around what's gone on in the family.
And that's why our program, I think, is really important, because the program at the colleges in this foster kinship care education program is located at every community college now. So our program doesn't make it mandatory that you have to do this legally or whatever. We are here to support anybody who's interested in fostering or adopting or providing kinship care.
Well, that's a good start. And today I want to talk about anyone who's caring for a child, a non-biological child. So that could be through adoption, foster care, or kinship care, or just because you're doing it because you need to do it, because this kid needs, you know, someone loving in their life. 1-877-372-KIDS. Call us this morning. We have a call now from Otila. She's from Oakland this morning, and she's joining us. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Thank you.
How are you?
Good. I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. I hear that you are talking about taking care of non-biological children, and I've had some couple of experiences with that, and I want to share that with your audience this morning.
Well, thank you. Go ahead.
I was in a situation as a young mother where I experienced divorce, and I had two young daughters at the time. And from the background that I come from, it's a collectivist society of which we grow up. We take care of other people in the family, or sometimes in the community, extended family, and so when I was going through my divorce with two young children, being that I was living with my parents, at some points they were helping me out. I had my grandmother who was helping to raise us and lived with us throughout our growing up. The children, I felt that the girls were very used to having their aunts and uncles around, and so it placed me in a situation where when I was ready to move on, I had to go overseas for a period of time, that I felt very comfortable that my girls were grew up with my parents, and they were very used to it, their uncles and aunts, and so they were still, I was able to leave them with my parents for a temporary period while I went and, you know, secured a job, and then they were able to join me at a later time.
You know, that's so important as you're presenting this, I think, in terms of that feels so much less traumatic for a child when, you know, they're raised in a village, you know, and I mean village in the sense of having lots of adults around who love them from early on. And so you had to do what you needed to do to care for your family, and leaving was so much less traumatic because you had already had that system in place. And Desar, that's what you were talking about.
Right, exactly. And I mean, that's a wonderful situation that she's describing, where she had her parents and her grandmother there. So this burden wasn't left on just one person. But oftentimes, what we're seeing are grandmothers, especially, who have been single parents themselves raising children, and now they're raising grandchildren. And oftentimes, their income is limited. They're older. Their life circumstances are such that they really don't have a lot of energy, time, or money for raising not just sometimes one child or two, but it could be multiples. So we know now that the support we give to kinship providers is essential. It's essential for the provider, and it's essential for the well-being of the child, and ultimately for the community.
And I want to ask you before you go, Attila, what was it like for you to be away from your children for that period of time?
You know, it was difficult. It was difficult going through that separation process from them. But I think that the thing that was very reassuring to me was that they were in a safe place. They were in a familiar place. They loved being with their grandparents, and they still do now. You know, the girls still have a very strong bond with their grandparents and aunts and uncles. So it was very much a reassurance for me that they were in a in a good place. They weren't being disrupted.
Yes, and I think again, I think there in many cultures there is a still that really strong sense of community and being there for each other. And I feel like there are a lot of people who don't have that any longer, and it makes it that much harder. I really appreciate you calling this morning. Thank you so much for your story.
Thank you for letting me share my experiences. Goodbye.
Bye bye.
And your caller's situation was such. But although she didn't want to leave her children, she had to for, you know, the betterment of her family and her career. It's different when someone comes and takes your children. And so, you know, we're looking at situations where children are removed from their biological parents because of maybe drug use or drug abuse, which is really one of the major reasons. And it's a very negative, destructive force in the life of a child, or if the parent is incarcerated and so forth. Those are circumstances that are less than ideal. In many instances, people feel shamed about this. The parent is denigrated oftentimes by family members, and it makes the child's life very, very chaotic and confusing, because every child loves and wants to be with their parent. I don't care
No matter what the parent does.
And grandmothers and aunts and uncles and other caregivers who love this child dearly are a poor substitute in the child's mind for the ideal parent that they're missing. And
Absolutely.
One of the major things that we have to sort of support the kinship providers or anyone who's taking care of a non-biological child, one of the major things we have to let them know is that they do not have to convince this child that they're good enough. You know, that you just do the best you can. And eventually, as children grow up, they can begin to discern for themselves. But we always want to support the child's notion of the idealized parent, because they deserve that. They deserve to have that memory or that thought or that fantasy.
That their parent
loves them. That's right.
And
absolutely.
And again, if you can be like our caller, where you can plan things out, that's very different than when stuff happens. Let's take a listen to some of the parents, Indisar, who you work with, talking about their experience.
I'm associate producer Lorenzo Plazola, and I'm interviewing some foster parents about non-biological parenting. So how did you become a foster parent, or why did you decide to?
I lost my daughter of stomach cancer. I had no other choice but to be a guardian for my granddaughter.
The children that I'm fostering happen to be my own grandchildren, and I did not want them to get in the system, and if not me, who?
I became a foster parent because this was my grandson, and I didn't want him to be in the system, and his mother was at a point in her life where she couldn't care for him. important.
What have been some of the challenges that you've experienced being a parent again?
Well, the main challenge for me has been that I thought I would be off in the blue horizon, traveling and just spending time with myself and my husband, but naturally, I have a second family. It's like starting over again. Being a retired nurse, I had to basically start all over again raising a young child, and in so doing that, I went back to school to become an early childhood preschool teacher.
So what would you say are some of the unique rewards about being a foster parent?
Working with little people all over again and just experiencing their world.
She is my daughter all over again because she is just like her mother, and it keeps me young. You know, it keeps me active. It keeps me on my toes.
Well, I'm able to do things with my grandkids that I wasn't able to do with my kids, because at that time when my kids were coming up, I was a full-time worker.
What would you say to anyone who's looking to become a foster caretaker?
Look into it. Be ready for challenges. Be ready to start all over again.
Don't hesitate and just take it in stride. And it's a rewarding experience.
I would say that make sure that this is something that you want to do because the child comes first.
And what do you want the general public to know about the subject of foster care?
It's a hard job, but we have to do it. And we need to make sure that our kids are taken care of. And we have a lot of kids that in need of parenting.
It's a lot of loving parents that need to look into foster care because it's enlightening, it's enriching, and it's good for me. I hate I had to become one because of that, but I have my daughter once again.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
Thank you so much, Lorenzo, and thank you to the parents who you spoke with. Such honest voices, Intisar.
And real positive, too. I'm just elated because I know I could recognize some of those voices, and I know the circumstances are very challenging for them. And for them to distill this down into the statements that they did, it makes me feel very good about their unity and coming together for these support groups and classes, because I know that's what's keeping them on the positive side.
I was going to say that makes all the difference in the world. You know, when I was at Kaiser in Richmond, I work with a lot of foster parents who came into pediatrics, and I would see them exhausted, frustrated, feeling just pulled apart by the pain they were suffering, often because it was their child who was down and out. Mm-hmm. And now they had the grandchild, for instance, to take care of. And they needed so much support for their own emotional health. And also, if you're a foster parent and you don't know this child, it doesn't come from your family, it's still the same thing of adjustment. It's huge. You know, you have an idea that I want to help a child, and then the reality hits that this is a child who needs a certain kind of attention that a lot of people just aren't ready for.
Absolutely.
How do you
mental
help
health,
them? Yeah.
Well, the mental health issues are insurmountable sometimes, because children who've been in foster care for any length of time may have suffered because of multiple placements and many other different circumstances in their life, and they really do need a lot of emotional support. So it's taxing on someone who's not prepared for that, which is why the state of California does require some training, which is why we have these training classes at all of our colleges, because we know foster parents, as well as adoptive parents and kinship providers, need as much information, as much support, as much ongoing training as possible in order for them to continue to do their job. And we really don't want to see children placed from one home to the next because the care provider has become exhausted with
right.
caring for them.
Because you talk to foster kids, teenagers, and one of the things you hear often is how hard it was for them when they had to go from home.
Right.
And it, you know, if those homes are all nurturing, well, that's great. Mm-hmm. But the experience of the child, you know, children need a home that's more permanent.
And sometimes, Mona, we have people who come into our classes and they say, well, you know, my children are grown and I have an empty room in my house. Well, the real issue is, do you have room in your heart?
That's a great question. We're talking about non-biological parenting, foster parenting, kinship care, relative care. And in a moment, we'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
Information for your kids.
For your family.
For you.
Give us a call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
The conversation continues after this.
Here's this week's Childhood Matters community calendar with events for parents and kids. Take a trip to the Museum of Art and History at the McPherson Center in Santa Cruz this first free Friday, March 4th, 11 to 9. For more information, call 831-429-1964. That's 831-429-1964. Enjoy free playgroups with your little one at the Child Care Center in Soledad every Tuesday, 9:30 to 11:30, and Thursday, 4:30 to 6:30. For more information, call 831-678-3671. That's 831-678-3671. Still in need of getting your pet fixed? Well, here's your last chance. The San Francisco SPCA is still offering free spaying and neutering today and tomorrow only. First come, first serve. Offices will be open 8 to 6. For more information, call 415-486-3266. That's 415-486-3266. Concerned about maintaining a healthy household? Check out the Creating Healthy Homes workshop at the Olive Grove Apartments in Santa Rosa, Monday, February 28, 1 to 2. For more information, call 707-575-6045. That's 707-575-6045. Show your support for the Family's Autism Support Group in San Francisco, Tuesday, March 1st, 6:30 to 8:30. For more information, call 415-920-5040. That's 415-920-5040. Come out to the Oakland Libraries and dance with your kids this Saturday, March 5th. Free classes will run 9 to 10 at the West Oakland Library and 1 to 2 at the Cesar Chavez Library. For more information, call 510-428-1155. That's 510-428-1155. And for additional information on events, call 510-663-5437. And to submit information, email info@childhoodmatters.org. I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
Do you know that every year, more than 40,000 babies are born with fetal alcohol syndrome? Fetal alcohol syndrome is the leading known cause of mental retardation and developmental disabilities and is entirely preventable. It's a birth defect caused by mothers drinking during their pregnancy. A baby with fetal alcohol syndrome may have growth deficiency, minor facial abnormalities such as small eyes or a thin upper lip, and central nervous system damage. How is fetal alcohol syndrome preventable? Pregnant women must avoid any amount of alcohol. So remember, don't drink your baby's future away. No amount of alcohol is safe while pregnant. For more information on programs for young children, contact your local Bay Area First Five County Commission by visiting firstfivekids.org/bay. Brought to you by your local First Five.
My darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I traveled for the great relief of having you to talk to.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Today we're talking with Dr. Intisar Sharif, the chairperson of the Early Childhood Education Department at Contra Costa College and director for the Foster Kinship Care Continuing Education Program at the college. And before we continue to talk about non-biological parenting, I just want to give you a quick message. In March, we'll be doing a radio show with Peggy Ornstein, best-selling author of many books, including her new book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Frontline of the New Girly Girl Culture. We have some books to give away to people who sign up on our website starting tomorrow. Check out our website at childhoodmatters.org, after 10 a.m., and we'll send you a book if you agree to read it before our show on March 27th. And then you can join us for a few minutes on the air with your opinion. Let's go to childhoodmatters.org, and you could also follow us on Facebook. So, into Sarah, we're going to take another call in a minute here, okay. But I just want to ask you, can you just tell me a couple of the key things you do with the parents you work with, the foster parents or kinship parents, to help them early in that process?
First of all, we give them a lot of information about the system itself. in terms of their rights, the role of the social workers, the resources available to the child. We try to inform them of how their parenting role may be different with this child, if the child especially has come through the system, than it would have been with their biological child. Then the other thing we do, I think, is we give them a lot of information on how to work with children. We have classes on discipline and behavior. We also have to give parents information about the special needs of children in care, because many times if the child has been chemically exposed in utero, there may be issues related to the health and the care of this child. And also we have to support people in finding resources for the mental health, not only of the child, but the family, so that this is not a stigma that something is wrong with them or the child, but the special needs of the child often require therapy, and we want to encourage people to seek out those resources.
Thank you. That's really good. Let's take another call. We'd love to hear from you this morning. We have Linda with us from Richmond. Hi, Linda.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome. So what's your story? Are you a foster parent?
I'm a foster parent of a set of beautiful 21-year-old twins. I've been a adoptive parent for 13 years, and I'm currently a foster parent of two beautiful girls. I'm also a pride trainer with Dr. Sharif at Contra Costa College, and I've been doing that since 2000.
And how old are your kids now?
They're 21 years old.
21.
They were 8.
Since 8. Oh, so you're real experienced at this.
I try.
And if you want to say something about right at the beginning when you first had your children come into your life, what do you think was most challenging for you?
The most challenging was I assume that because they were such physically beautiful children that they didn't have any problems. But they had multiple problems. I didn't have any information at the time, and I hope that I didn't make mistakes that were damaging to them. That was the hardest challenge because I had not previously fostered any children that were non-biological.
And, you know, I want to say, Linda, as a parent of four kids, my biological kids, I sure made a lot of mistakes. I mean, they turned out great, but all parents do. And, you know, what's so interesting to me is when I used to teach parenting classes at Kaiser, the foster parents would come in and say, you know, I'm not supposed to yell at my kids, I'm not supposed to hit my kids, so I'm here to really learn how to discipline respectfully, because that was part of their mandate to become a foster parent. And so, you know, my guess is that, yeah, you made some mistakes, and you probably did a whole lot of good.
That I did.
Yeah. Any words of advice for parents who are starting out in this foster care adventure?
I think it's important that you try to, in your time frame, make lifetime connections. Even if you don't physically have the children for a lifetime, if in that moment that you have a chance to embrace them where they are, just try to make it last forever. Be positive. Try to be a role model for them. Even if they don't seem to follow the lead, if you think that's the best lead, give it to them anyway instinctively and honor desire. That was one of my hardest challenges. Even if they thought the grass was greener, in reference to other non-biological foster parents, foster students, just if they think it's greener, let them go, but still hold a place in your heart if they need to come back or call back. If you have opportunity, still try to make that lifetime connection.
Boy, Intisara, Linda really has a lot of wisdom, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. She's a marvel. She really is. She loves unconditionally, and that's what it really takes.
And I love that people who are in the system of, you know, the foster care system or kinship care, they can be the ones to really support other parents. So, Linda, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're listening to Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Pick up the phone and get involved. Call Childhood Matters now at 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 1-877-372-KIDS.
Well, I'm really happy to say joining us in the studio now is Myra Guzman. She's a community liaison for South Monterey County with the Family to Family Monterey Foster Care Program of Community Health Services. She's been serving as the community liaison for the last 4 years. The Family to Family Foster Care aspires to protect children that find themselves in abusive and neglectful situations, and they provide ongoing support to biological parents through means of referral referrals to services that really may support their safety plan in an effort to reunite families with their children. Myra Guzman, thank you for driving all the way from Monterey this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having us here. And it was quite a commute, but we are really happy to be here and share some information with people.
Good. And you brought with you Maria Ramirez. Maria, you're a foster care provider for a teenage child. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
And thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So let me ask you, you know, we've been talking already about the challenges, the rewards, and the complexities of having a non-biological child. Myra, what kinds of situations are the children you work with facing, and how do you work to help the biological parents as well as the foster parents who step up to care for the children?
Well, there are many situations that come into place when children are placed into foster care. And some of the times that they do come into care, they don't necessarily go to a foster parent or a licensed home care provider. We try our best to find relatives or near kin placements, which are friends of the family or people that may be close to the family, such as neighbors and so forth. And a lot of the situations are children who are potentially at risk, that are facing, you know, severe neglect to physical abuse and other traumatic situations at home. And many times we find ourselves having to find resources that are available at a local level for families. Parents sometimes need an extra support system there to kind of guide them on having to better deal with a lot of the stress in the home or possibly drug addiction, alcohol addiction. So there are many things that are taking place in the home that can sometimes result in, you know, the child being harmed or being placed in uncertain situations that may cause harm to the child. So as a program, what we try to do is provide support for the whole family and the foster parents or the relative caregivers, depending on the situation. So we work directly with the parents to try and identify what the situation may be and work together with social services and their social worker to identify possible resources that are going to help, you know, bring the family back together. And in some cases, we're able to work directly with the foster parents so that we can then also see where the child is and how they're doing in the foster home and if they need any support for the child as well, because there may be mental health support services that are available for the children as well.
Absolutely. And I like so much that you're looking at the whole family. You know, you're caring for the child, the biological parent, the foster parent. It really is that unit that needs care. And we don't know what's going to happen in the future for that child, but they need people like you and they need those services. And I always worry so much these days that these kinds of services are going to be cut by the budget and we all have to just do our very best, because this is essential that parents get these services. I want to ask you, Maria, what motivated you to take teenagers who needed a place to live into your home?
Well, one of the reasons is that I do have my own, I went through my own kids being teenagers, and being able to understand their attitudes, their problems, their needs. I try with little ones. I mean, I start with little kids, and then I got more into teenagers because it was easy for me to deal at that time because of my kids going through the same stage. And understanding the stage that they're going through when they become teenagers is totally different. Hormone-wise, it's like...
Hormonally-wise. You know that, Intisar, don't you?
it is really like you have to have skills to, to really deal with it.
That's right. That's right. You need special skills, and you saw that you had them.
Yes. Being able to deal with it is because I grew up in a big family, too. So the kids were like really, really needed in security.
Yes.
And being able to understand attitudes was like kind of a hard to deal with it because you need to learn their habits and their like needs.
Yeah. And I mean, that's true for children of all ages, but some people are just better with teens than others, don't you think?
Right. And teenagers especially are very hard to place in the foster care system, and they need people like her who are willing to work with them, because what happens oftentimes when children are placed young and then they end up in the staying in the system, and they reach their teen years, and they become problematic. That's when folks give up and say, it's too hard, you know, come get this kid. So we really appreciate providers like you who can work with teenagers.
And some of these kids, they just need, like, a smile or thank you.
They need kind heart.
Uh-huh, and sometimes it's funny because they get me upset when they do some stuff, and when I just go in and smile and say, hey, come, let's go eat or let's take off because we're leaving to some places, sometimes they ask me, are you mad at me? I said, no.
Yeah.
Why not? I said, because you're growing.
Yeah.
You're being a teenager, being a kid, but then you're going into adulthood, and it's going to take you a while to...
Boy, to have an understanding mama like that is just worth its weight in gold. Let's take another call. We have Thelma with us this morning from Richmond. Good morning, Thelma.
Good morning.
How's it going this morning?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Good. Tell us about your wisdom around being, are you a foster parent or a kinship carer?
Well, I've actually done kinship, fostering, as well as adopting. I'm a parent of three adopted children, and I've cared for over 50, 60 foster children over a 20-year period.
Wow, wait, let me bow here and give you a lot of gratitude for the work you do. And some of the children have come and left your life and other children you adopted, right? So what wisdom do you have, Thelma, for parents who might consider doing this?
Well, first thing I like to say is it is truly an honor and a reward to reach out to children and families. I feel that it's my passion, and I think it's so important to work with our birth families, because when children can see that where they're living, the person that's caring for them is also caring of their family, it makes for a happier child.
Yes.
And also, I definitely need to say that I could not have done this work as well as I have had it not been for the foster kinship care education program that I've been a part of for over 15 years.
That makes all the difference in the world. It really does.
All the difference in the world.
Yeah. And I just want to know, Maria here, who is also a foster mom, are you part of a program?
Yes, I am.
And that must mean so much to you.
Yes, yeah, those classes and educating us to understand their needs, their behavior, it helped me understand my own and my own family needs and behavior. And I quite understand why our brain works a certain way.
Yeah.
And usually on our teenage, why we have so much of that.
Yeah. Thelma, how old is your oldest child?
The oldest is now 19.
Uh-huh.
On the adopted, see, I have birth children as well. My oldest adopted daughter is 19.
You know, Intisar, I sometimes wonder, you know, how we can clone people like Thelma and Maria. Like, what
well,
does it take?
One of the things that I found with both the other caller, Linda and Thelma, in terms of cloning them is to have them work with other foster parents. So they are trainers in our program, and they work directly with other foster parents. That's as close as we can come to cloning them, because they're the best ones to really give support and information to their colleagues.
Yeah. So, Thelma, I think today I would like to send you some tickets for the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Have you been there with any of your kids?
No, I have not.
Well, it's an amazing place. It's beautiful. If you could find a way to get to Monterey, we will send you some tickets. I'll have our producers talk to you. I just want you to have a fun afternoon of relaxation. And at this point, I'm sure they help take care of you a little bit once in a while, too. Thelma, thank you so much. We're about to go to a break talking about non-biological parenting. In a moment, we'll take your call.
Thank you.
Childhood Matters.
Helpful advice, inspiration, and resources for parents.
Get involved. Call 1-877-372-KIDS.
Children's brains develop based on early experiences. The more positive interactions children have, the healthier their development. Talking and communicating with children not only shows love, but also encourages the development of speech patterns and social skills. Here are some tips when talking with young children. Talk to babies early and often. This promotes bonding and lays the foundation for language development. Sing to and with your children. Use a broad vocabulary to expose children to many different words. Engage children in conversation by asking open-ended questions. And read aloud or share stories with your children and ask them questions about what they learned. For more information on programs for young children, contact your local Bay Area First 5 County Commission by visiting first5kids.org/bay. Brought to you by your local First 5. We all aspire to live happy and fulfilled lives and raise our children with these values. But the stresses we face day to day can get in our way. Find support with Nurse Rona's podcast, Happiness Matters, with Dr. Christine Carter, author of Raising Happiness, where you'll learn about the science and art of cultivating these values and passing them on to the children in your lives. This podcast is available on our website or on iTunes. For more information, visit us at childhoodmatters.org. This is Nurse Rona letting you know that you can connect with Childhood Matters anytime on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Now you can get the latest tips, resources, book recommendations, and share your thoughts with other parents and become part of our virtual community. As always, you can sign up for our podcasts and download past shows, community reports, and interviews. Visit childhoodmatters.org to learn more. That's childhoodmatters.org. And tell your friends.
What a day. From the grocery store to the doctor's office, it's nice to sit back and let Sophia play.
Definitely, but I feel it's important to have the kids in special programs. I'm always learning how competitive school is, even at this young age.
Me too. I worry I'm not doing enough to teach Sophia the skills she'll need, even though she's just 4. I read an article yesterday that said play is a great way for children to learn.
So you're telling me that when my kids play at preschool or at home, they're learning something?
The article said play is the way children develop their understanding of the world. So when kids play with friends or pretend to count money or rhyme words or build with blocks, they're actually learning in different ways, socially, physically, and intellectually. They learn how to think critically and problem solve, making them more confident.
That makes sense. The other day, Danny was so proud when he and Sophia built a fire station in the sandbox. He is learning when he's having fun, so we can relax and encourage the learning they do when they play.
Mommy, Mommy, look what I made!
Wow, you built a ramp to make your cars race faster.
This message brought to you by the Early Childhood Funders. Play. It's the way young children learn.
I think I'll color this man father.
Color him father.
I think I'll color him love.
Color him love.
Said I'm gonna color him father.
Color him father.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First 5.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Today we're talking with Dr. Intisar Sharif, the chairperson of the Early Childhood Education Department at Contra Costa College, and also the director for the Foster Kinship Care Continuing Education Program at the college, and Myra Guzman. She's the community liaison for South Monterey County with the Family to Family Monterey Foster Care Program of Community Health Services, and Maria Ramirez, a foster care provider for teenagers. You know, Intisar, when we were just talking on the break, you said something I think is really important, that it doesn't just take being loving and nice. There's something else that's required. Just say a little bit more about that.
Well, I think sometimes people feel if I'm a good person, I have a good heart, I want to bring a child into my home. And that's wonderful. That's a good beginning, but it's not all-encompassing. People really need to be trained. The children who come into the system have been traumatized by virtue of the removal from their family, and that shows up in a lot of angry behavior sometimes or depressive behavior. And people need to know how to work with children who are under this kind of pressure and under these circumstances. And even if it's a little baby, a lot of times people say, well, I'll take a young baby because the child doesn't know. Children do know. They've been in utero for 9 months.
Yeah.
They know. So we really want people who are willing to engage in this process ongoingly as far as getting continuous training, because you're going to need it.
What do you think about that, Maria?
Yeah, it is required or necessary to educate yourself. There's a lot of situations that even with your family, you don't experience with the foster kids. It's just that we're taking away so much from these kids. And you, when they come to you, they feel like you're the enemy, not really someone that's going to
protect
them. They
can't trust you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You have to win their trust. Winning their trust is just, it takes like a few minutes, just smiling, helping them, assuring them that I'm here to help you. I'm not going to be, you have to put in into that. It's me, my own self, I don't have so many roles. I just treat them like my own kids.
But you also have to set limits, and you have to have some rules, and you have have structure.
My roles when they come to my house is respect, no hitting, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
And make your bed.
And make your bed. I like that. Myra, what Intisar said, you very much want to encourage people to consider taking on the role of being a foster parent or have kinship care or adopt a child. But what she said is also true. You have to be up for it.
Well, you have to be really aware of what you're going to get yourself into, because a lot of the kids, as she mentioned, have a lot of behaviors that are going to come up, and they will come up. There's just no way around that. And what you need to be doing is be ready for that and be ready to tackle it on, because the last thing we need is for kids to be bouncing around in foster care from one home to another, because that's even more disruptive for them.
When parents get support, then there are ways to then be able to handle what comes up.
Yes, so accessing that support system, whether it's your social worker, whether it's a therapist, whether it's your caseworker, whatever the deal may be, I mean, just having that support system, it's going to be really helpful, because there are going to be times you're going to hit a wall and you're not going to know how to tackle
that. And I want to say how important that is for parents who may take on a relative in their home and aren't through the system. You know, those parents need to know that they don't have to be isolated either, that there are programs involved, even if you don't go through the legal support system, and that's really important. We have a call now from Leticia. She's from Seneca Center, a place that I've known for a long time, does amazing work here in the Bay Area to help lots of kids. Leticia, good morning.
Good morning, Rona. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, what's special about the kinds of parents you're working with at Seneca Center?
Yeah, you know, at Seneca Center, we really value unconditional care for the kids that we work with. And our foster parents in our intensive treatment foster care program are really no exception. Our goal is really to help support youth and their families through the hardest times in their lives. And the way that we want to do that is to support the tremendous expertise, compassion, and commitment of our foster parents, so that they really have all of the tools that they need to ensure that they can parent the kids in their homes. Like your guests and callers have said, requires a lot of support and training. And at the core, though, that love and compassion and desire to give back and to support a child and give them the experience of being with a family. So what we really try and focus on is giving the things to our foster parents that they need in order to provide that for the family that foster youth is going to come into, which includes, you know, like everyone's saying, that training initially to come into the program, and then really ongoing weekly and sometimes daily visits from our counselors. We offer support groups, respite care, all of those kinds of things.
You know, I remember someone I knew who had went and lived with a grandparent, I think it was, you know, in another state, and Seneca even sent one of their staff to check on that child at one point because they really wanted to make sure there was continuity. And I think you do whatever's needed to be successful, because even if we look at it from a financial point of view, if we help children early on, if we help families early on, the cost to the system is going to be so much lower. And I wish our politicians and everyone would see that early intervention, that early help is what helps. Something final here before we have to wrap up, Leticia?
I just, again, really appreciate having having the opportunity to talk about the tremendous work that our foster parents do. And thank you so much.
And how can people find out about Seneca Center?
If people are interested in either Seneca Center or foster parenting at Seneca Center, they can call Shona Baum at 510-777-5300.
Great.
Or check out our website at SenecaCenter, all one word, .org.
Thank you so much. Intisar, we're finishing up here. A final word for people who are listening, no matter what their exact relationship is with a child who's non-biological.
Well, I would love to invite them to come to our classes that we offer. We have highly trained professionals, pediatric nurses, pediatricians, social workers, therapists, counselors, who come and share their information expertise with our parents, and it's marvelous.
And how do people in Contra Costa find you?
Also at the website for the college. They can look
there. Just go to Contra Costa College. And, you know, if you don't know where to find help in your county, also call 211, call me, send me an email. Every county does have people like these wonderful folks this morning who can help you out. Myra Guzman, how can people find you in Monterey?
In Monterey County, we can actually be located online. You can go on www.f2f.org. And in South Monterey County, you can also join one of our orientations where we have a social worker and also a therapist that will provide information on foster care and will get you going if that's the direction you want to take.
And a final word of encouragement for parents who are on the border, you know, are thinking about this but aren't sure. What would you say to them?
Well, what I would say is, you know, if it's something that you've been thinking about and you really want to see if it's what's good for you and you really want to try and have an impact on a child, I would say, you know, go in and attend an orientation and get some information from a foster parent who's directly working with kids and helping kids, and you will see the impact that it has on a child. I myself was in foster care growing up in San Mateo County, so, I mean, I'm here now, and if it's something that you think may have an impact, it has an impact. You know, there's kids out there that are just waiting for somebody to have that opportunity to engage with them and give them an opportunity to trust.
So as a child who was in foster care, if you could just say one thing that you thought made the difference in terms of your resilience, your hope, the fact that you knew you could make it, what was it?
Well, you know, it was hard adjusting, but I think that with the family that I was placed with, I was actually with my brothers and sisters, so we were able to stay together. And the separation was an anxiety for us, just having to leave the home, but together and staying in one home made it for us, and the fact that they didn't give up on us. And it was the Sen family in Foster City who took us in. And I'm really thankful that they actually didn't take us back or return us to another home, just because we were pretty much a handful.
Yeah,
it was a hard one, but you know, Miss Sen cooked us supper, and it was just a whole different atmosphere for us, a whole different setting, and they just hung in there.
You are helping other kids. It's just a beautiful thing to hear. Thank you so much. And a final word from you, Maria Ramirez, encouragement for parents.
We really need foster parents. We are really kind of shorthanded here, especially for a Hispanic foster parent. Parenting, we'd really encourage everyone to, or whoever feels that they qualify for this. If you're a parent, you can do it. If you're a parent, you have already have gone through all that. You educated yourself, because it's having a kid and being a parent is not a book that someone gave you. And you know that every kid is different.
Every kid is different. And you know, if you're in Monterey County, Maria Ramirez is going to help you, and so is Myra Guzman. Thank you so much to my guests, Intisar Sharif. It's always wonderful to have you with me. And thank you to our team, great team, Felsha Zuschlag, Lorenza Plazola at the controls, and all of the Nuestros Niños team here helping out this morning. My gratitude to my children, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina. This is Rona saying goodbye until next week. And remember, spend time with your child, and don't forget to take good care of yourself. Childhood matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters,
produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media. Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.